The year is 2030. The world has changed. The past decade has been marked by extraordinary progress, innovation and change. Politics, business, jobs and society are barely recognizable. In many ways, the world is a better place. In lots of others, it isn't. Retail and shopping has undergone a revolution. You may not foresee this in the year you are listening. In these audio recordings that we have delivered to the British Retail Consortium, we will report back from the year 2030 to help warn, inform and light the way to the future. Good luck on the journey you have ahead. See you soon.
Hi, my name's Claire Bailey, and for the last 40 years of my life, I've been working in retail and as a result became known as something of an independent retail expert and high street campaigner. And there's been so much change over the years. I mean, obviously, we saw the internet first come to life in 95, the first mobile phone, the first iPhone in 2007, creation of social media and app stores. And the pace of change up till now, 2030, has been so enormous. And of course, back then, a good 10 years or more ago, it caused somewhat distress to the high street and to the retail sector.
Claire, tell them what shopping is like now.
Of course, the high street had to respond, didn't it? And now shopping looks different, as it should. Finally, retailers embraced the technology and the pace of change and updated the shopping experience to integrate the physical and the digital and some of the technologies that were just beginning to emerge. Technologies like virtual and augmented reality, and also the seamless integration of mobile technology so that people could actually just wander into a store, be immediately identified, receive personalized promotions, little guides to take them all around the store to find the products that might interest them, virtual personal shoppers. It was amazing how it all evolved. It's just unfortunate that it took as long as it did for some of them to grasp the need to change. And I think what I saw was that people, when they went to work, almost forgot what it was like to be a consumer. And putting themselves in the consumer's shoes was the only way they could ever predict the current and then future needs of those consumers.
And high streets have changed, haven't they?
So now the 2030 High Street, it's a very different place to what it was 10 or 15 years ago. Obviously, back then, we saw a few of the big names fade away, but I think that was due to the fact that they hadn't responded to change quickly enough. And what that did do, of course, was leave gaps for innovative new businesses to spring up and to make it a lot more vibrant and experiential. We saw a slight shift away from pure traditional product retail and into lots of mixed-use environments where you might go into a cafe, get to play the latest games, jump on a virtual reality headset and collect your online orders, which were from the retailer up the road, but they were closed when you needed to nip in last time. So the whole mixing up of all the different technologies and capabilities led to a much more convenient and seamlessly integrated customer experience, which ultimately was much more exciting. And I think the key that was being missed back then was, what did convenience mean? Because it was a whole host of things, some of which were beyond the scope of individual retailers and were much more to do with the place managers. And things like, for example, accessible parking, clean and hygienic streets, well-lit environments, and of course, encouraging retailers to remain open at the hours when communities were wanting to use their high streets were so fundamental to seeing them shift from a time of distress to a time of success. For me, I think one of the step changers was when larger national retailers with multiple outlets recognised that if they were going to be paying into community organisations like business improvement districts, that they needed to take advantage of that at the hyper-local level. The independents were well served in so much as they tended to be owner-operated, so the owner knew what they were paying in terms of statutory levies, they knew what they were having to do in terms of promoting their needs to the people that were facilitating the changes in the community. For instance, that free parking or different opening hours or events that brought footfall back to town centres. The larger companies typically would receive their bill for the business rates and the associated statutory levy, because the business improvement district levy was linked to their rateable values. And some of them would be paying up to 2% per store of the rateable value But it would go to finance or someone in property. So then, unfortunately, no one in marketing, let's say, had a clue what was going on and would be merrily doing corporate marketing campaigns that were relatively homogenous across the country. Whereas what was great was when they recognised that if they were going to take advantage of that spend, they could work with their marketing teams to help them deliver hyper-local campaigns. And then operationally, they could empower members of the store management and the area management to actually go and express what their needs and wants from that community at the meetings of the bids and the local authorities. And thus, they were both working at the corporate level and contributing enormously to the economic development of town centres, whilst also getting the benefit from that investment at the local level.
And the government? Tell them, Claire.
It was a long time coming, wasn't it? But at last, in 2030, the government have decided to do a complete overhaul and restructure of the business rate system. Instead of faffing about with these little online taxes that really don't bring the balance between large distribution centres based in the middle of nowhere versus high street shops in what were once considered prime retail property. But of course, once people were able to sell from anywhere, including the kitchen table, and once they're able to tap into marketplaces that popped up all over the place, and logistics and courier businesses grew off the back of that, of course, it made it very much of an unlevel playing field, because a massive company turning over billions of pounds could literally operate from what would arguably be known as a shed or a warehouse in the past. And actually, that was just as prime retail space as any high street store.
And what it means to be a 2030 consumer.
What's been also interesting is the way that retailers responded to the need for enhanced customer experience. Getting rid of cash registers and losing barriers between those people who are considered servers and customers has meant that people are now product experts, product demonstrators and sales facilitators. They assist people in finding the product they need. Some of the innovation we've seen is once upon inspired, I think, by the movie Minority Report, which just goes to show Hollywood were well ahead of the game. And the shopping environment, with even virtual assistants as well and holograms and so on, has meant that it's brought so much more product information to the consumer. What was also quite interesting was the shift away from classic text-based search to voice search, in so much as the businesses who were wanting to be found online had to think very differently about how they could be found, because voice search tended to just return one result. If you think about how it used to be with Siri and Alexa and all those other technologies that came out 10 or so years ago, 20 or so years ago. And in fact, those results only gave one answer to the question and people trusted it. So they had to think very differently about how they would be found. And once they were found, how they would then be talked about. Because the impact of peer-to-peer review on social media, and particularly in leisure and hospitality, we saw the incredible influence of TripAdvisor, sort of 10 to 15 and even 20 years ago, and also other social channels, the way that people were talking through the likes of Snapchat, which for me back then was completely new technology aimed at teenage children, but then became so mainstream as to be very dominant.
Claire, they must know of some of the scars of change.
I think communities do struggle to respond well to significant change, because there are a lot of people who like to keep things as they were. They have a sense of nostalgia. But actually, if you look back over time, high streets have largely not changed in about 300 years. The properties is still there. The heritage is still there. It's what happens inside those properties and how people interact, how people work, rest and play, as it were, that has changed. And in fact, much as people can be nostalgic about things and feel it's sad that such and such has gone, you do have to recognise the fact that if the businesses didn't make themselves sufficiently relevant to the company, to the customer, and therefore the customer was disengaged and spending elsewhere, then they were really only having themselves to blame. I think one of the things that used to irritate me more than anything was the way that the internet used to get blamed for the death of the high street. This had two negative impacts on retail. One, Constant media reporting of death of the high street unnerved businesses who might want to expand, and particularly independent retailers who might be thinking about opening a first or second or third shop to become the next large business. But when you hear that constantly repeated in the media, it gives you a lack of confidence, and it also creates an issue around consumer confidence, which in turn constrains spending. So it's basically a very massive downward spiral, and it was completely false. The other thing was that it was often reported that the internet was killing the high street. But actually, if you look at some of the most successful retailers over time, they're the ones that have integrated their online and offline experience because they can't be open 24/7. And perhaps the whole idea of being able to go and browse product, meet a product demonstrator, whether holographic or real, and then actually get that facilitated sale, but you choose to transact that online, either there and then on your mobile device, or with your voice-controlled kiosk, or back at home, or you might take it away with you. So I think that's really an important thing for us to reflect on, is that, yes, people are nostalgic and have some sense of pain as a result of change, but actually, if the change wasn't wanted, the people wouldn't have done it as customers.
They cannot foresee what is coming. Tell of some of the surprises.
I think the biggest surprise in 2030, and it began back in around 2019, 2020, was the beginning of movement away from pure play online. We saw figures drop. The volume of sales that were going through online channels as a proportion of total retail sales fell away. But then that might well have been something to do with the fact that there was the beginning of the emergence of the blurring of the lines. So if you were physically in a store and you'd been online first, should the sale be reported to online or store? Well, actually, that's all gone now. And luckily, the lines have blurred so much as to not exist, and it's either a sale or not a sale. But certainly, I think that was the biggest surprise. People assumed and predicted that online and pure play would continue to grow. And obviously, it had been growing very, very quickly since the emergence of mobile from about the year 2000. But anything very small can grow very quick. It's the old lies, damn lies and statistics. But once it's reached a plateau, what we saw was that people actually really wanted to engage with the physical environments and experience the product, not commoditized products. Obviously, there was a number of older retailers who were pretty much destroyed as a result of the change of substrate of product. People in music, gaming, video, and so on. And also, nobody anticipated the growth of things like bitcoins and virtual currency, which actually made a very cashless environment. And having all the different mobile pay solutions really did damage the card holders, which meant that there was less available data for people to understand the behavior. And only a very few large players had that data to sort of help retailers better understand how customers were interacting. But certainly, I think that whilst the internet played an enormous role, what was fascinating was to see it slow down as a sales channel and become much more of a facilitator of an experience.
I am a child of the technological revolution. Am I your favourite development?
I think for me, using virtual and augmented reality is probably one of my favourite technological developments. Virtual reality deployed for staff training to help them go through dealing with difficult customers, for product knowledge and understanding. It's brilliant because it was something that we could do anytime, any place, anywhere. And it continues to evolve as a technology for communication without actually having to have the investment of training rooms and product demonstrators. But the augmented reality in terms of customer experience has been something that I think was wonderful. Being able to both visualize product back in your own home, but also interact with brands, hovering my phone over a menu and getting pictures of the food I was going to be served with, watching people actually making clothes for me when I'm hovering over the item in a designer outlet. What an amazing transformation, and it really enriched the experience. And the other thing it stopped was people necessarily diving off to social media where they might be influenced by disgruntled customer review, because it kept them in the immersive world of virtual augmented reality, but that was also curated by the brand. So the brand took back something in the control of the experience.
They have no idea. They may take the wrong course. Warn them.
So I think, reflecting on how we've learned from the past, going forward from 2030 and beyond, what retailers need to do is not be afraid of change. Be bold, be dynamic. If it fails, well, at least you try it. If you don't try, you'll never know. I mean, there were opportunities in abundance, but I think people were very scared for failure. I mean, I remember working way back, probably some 12 years or more ago, with Amazon. They created a pop-up shop, and it actually reflects the way retailing has ended up today. But just imagine, back then, there were retailers with hundreds of physical outlets in a very traditional format. Turning that into an experience, almost like a showcase of product, and inviting brands and people in to actually demonstrate product and introduce customers to getting hands-on, making candles together, co-creation, personalization. If only people had grasped that sooner, I think we'd have seen things recover sooner. But thankfully, we now are in a world where people embrace change, embrace community, understand the relationship between their business and their neighbor. It isn't just about being that one shop in that one town. It's being one of many. And obviously, the rotten apple spoils a cart. So I think the spirit of community, working collaboratively with all the stakeholders in town centres for the benefit of the businesses, the shoppers, the local authority, and all the users of that place. And then also grasping technology and not being afraid for it to fail. Be afraid for it to be a success, and your competitor to have got there first, would be my suggestion.
Some say this progress has helped build a cleaner, clever world. Others look back mournfully, yearning for a time gone by. Claire, do you prefer our 2030 retail?
From my point of view, I'm a passionate change agent, so I'm always going to say I like things that reflect a futuristic direction of travel. I love the new technologies and how simple they are, how they've simplified all manner of business processes and saved money and time and wasted effort. I mean, blockchain is hardly the most exciting development in the history of time, but it made such a difference to supply chain and logistics globally and opened up a standard to help people do a better and more efficient job, which obviously makes them more profitable, which is great for the benefit of shareholders. So yes, what do I do prefer retail now, and I'm looking forward to where it goes. And it's great to see a much more connected, cohesive retail experience compared to how it was when it was all called multi-channel, and it was almost as though it was a battle between online and physical, as opposed to what we've got today, where everything is just a relatively simple experience and so very convenient. And I think it's such a fast-paced industry, and it has so much impact on so many, from farming to manufacturing to communities and obviously to the general public. So many people are employed in different aspects of the sector, whether they be the ones programming the VR headsets or whether be the ones voice-overing the holographic sales staff. But there was this prediction that there would be a loss of jobs. And I think there'll be a massive, I think what we've seen is, and will continue to see, is a change in the nature of jobs. So I think what's great is to be in a position where you can help people develop new skills, new ways of thinking, adoption of innovation, and the continuous process improvement philosophy that transcends being a customer-centric culture.
Claire, my power is low. Time is nearly up. Deliver your final message.
Well, luckily, as I'm looking back and looking forward from 2030, I know how much uncertainty and fear there was 10 or 15 years ago, as things were going quite badly for the sector. But I think that what's absolutely essential is to remember that, stay relevant, keep on top of the skills, and don't assume that the jobs we've got today are the jobs we'll have tomorrow, or the skills we've got today are the skills we'll have tomorrow. Because looking back, that was so true. And those retailers who are agile enough to grasp the younger generation and their knowledge and their passion, and to look outside of industry into things like gaming and technology development to bring in different ways of working and different talent pools, I think that was one of the things that helped make the difference for those that were most successful in the last 10 years.
Thank you for listening. Power shutting down. We will deliver more 2030 audio files to the British Retail Consortium soon.